This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Listening to Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston 90.1 FM, and Galveston 89.5 FM.
You're out of the office, you don't return my call. You're missing at the gym, no one's seen you around at all. Used to see you every weekend, all the time that we spent. Partners in crime, having us a time. We used to have benefits, but that was the end of it. Since you got your new boyfriend.
If you ever find one as faithful as me, as stupid as me.
We used to have benefits, but that was the end of it. Since you got your new boyfriend.
I heard all about your new stupid boyfriend. Yada, yada, yada. Your new stupid boyfriend. Oh my God. Your new stupid boyfriend. To the hand.
Another day, knowing how it leads on. about it if I should ever come back. You got something to say, got something to prove. We both wanna play hard and forget the rules. So we go down to the field and find a new love to fill the void. Blow the whistle, toss the coin. You can be skins and I'll be shirts. We can pretend that this won't hurt. Standing on two separate sides, working on secrets. The blame that we both lose. Is this really the way to get closer than before? You fake to the right, even up the score. You and I, taking chances in some game of love. You can be skins and I'll be shirts. You can pretend that this won't hurt. Standing on two separate sides, working on secrets and lies. And what is the point of this game? Tell me who will take the blame when we both
program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
You have have tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music geared to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours.
Hello, Houston, Galveston, and the world. This is the February... February, Jesus.
Whoa!
Christ.
Wow.
April 19th edition of After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude.
I'm going back in time.
Man, I screwed up. Big deal.
Yeah. And you are?
It happens.
I don't know who I am. I'm Chris Harrison. I'll be your co-executive producer for this evening.
And I'm Jimmy Carper. I'm the other one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Back from Chula Vista, California.
So we just sold San Diego last time.
Yeah. Well... It's Chula Vista is kind of like the Woodlands of San Diego.
Pretentious.
yeah, kind of. Actually, it's a kind of a gated community thing going there. Section I was in, visiting some old friends, and just kind of. I didn't even go to Tijuana. And they're only 6 miles from the border.
Oh, my goodness.
And I didn't even go. And, you know, we just hung out.
You didn't... What, are you afraid they were going to pull you up on stage during the hockey show?
No, 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 no. No.
I know Jimmy would have had fun on that.
I don't do donkey shows anymore. No.
Or any less.
Well, that may be. Anyway, I'm back. It's good to be back and good to be back on the air. We've got some announcements. We've got kind of a packed show tonight because we've got Chris coming in for Black on Black, and Justin will be along with a segment he's going to do.
Yeah.
And we've discussed it, but we haven't discussed the name or anything because he's a therapist and he's going to have a couple of other folks in, and they're going to be talking about violence in the GLBT community amongst each other, you know, domestic violence.
Yeah.
So that's something that we tend to, in our zeal to present the gay community in the best light, we kind of try to overlook things like that and Matthews and all the bad things that happened in our community. But we do need to talk about these things and discuss them and get them out in the open and maybe get some people out of bad situations. So that'll be going on in the second segment of the show, and then the roundtable. Now, announcements, things going on, events in the community. As always, every Wednesday evening, Tony's Corner Pocket presents Tony's Corner Divas. Every week featuring Lillian Devereaux, and then the others kind of rotate from Anne-Marie Gill, Selena St. John, Marsha Mink Gill, and Regina Dane. Three out of the four will be there on the other weeks. So, that is some of the best drag you'll see in Houston. Things going on today, Sunday. I almost forgot how to do that. The GLBT Community Center is having a fundraiser, a little French flavor. Fantastique new benefit event, une soirée pelu, a garden party. And that's happening today, Sunday, April the 20th. A glamorous new benefit. It's an afternoon dance party from 2 to 6 p.m. at Riches, 2401 San Jacinto. Organized and hosted by the Houston GLBT Community Center, home base for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people and their allies in the metropolitan area and southeast Texas. Tickets begin at $25 for general admission, which includes complimentary well drinks. And the French-inspired theme event will feature dancing and other ooh-la-la special activities. The popular Houston drag diva Anita Bump will MC the afternoon, which will also include performances by Bernadette, Jenna Dre, and Eric Allen. XM Radio's DJ Mark D will provide music and a saucy underwear fashion show with male and female models will be presented by M2M Style Lounge. And I can tell that Tim Brookover wrote that. He's the only guy I know that uses the word saucy. Yeah. So, and also, we want to congratulate the Southern Country, Houston. They're having a big do this weekend. Events happening, and there's still a couple. Well, one that you can catch, and that will be tonight, Sunday night, from 7 to 10 p.m. Dancing with the Presidents. The Lone Star Lariats will partner as the dancers with President of the Colt 45, Stephen Bunch, President of the Misfits, Rene Cantu, President of the Bears, Carlos Rivera, and President of Southern Country Houston, the newly elected Mike Gomes. I pronounced that right. And that's, of course, happening at the BRB. Things going on with our friends over at Arisa's, the Empire of the Royal Sovereign and Imperial Court of the Single Star. Sunday, April the 20th, 8 p.m. at George Bar. Join Grand Duke 24, Matt Gill, for his show Under the Covers. And it's his birthday celebration. Birthday celebration. That's George Bar at 617 Fairview. And some other things coming up with the Reese's for next week. Next Friday, April the 25th, Wish Upon a Star, hosted by Count Royce Wood and Raina Natasha Nicole. That's happening at 8:30 p.m. at EJ's. And the next night, Saturday, April the 26th, 8 p.m. at Tony's Corner Pocket, the IP Freely Show, hosted by IP's Imperial Prince. For Rain 24, Scott Kenyon, Falcon, Lillian Devereaux, and Aurora Breyer, the Imperial Prince and Princesses. Then Sunday, on April 27th at 7 p.m. at EJ's, Production Volume 1, hosted by IPR, Imperial Princess Royale, Marsha Mink Ann Gill, and Crystal Rayleigh Love. Then Imperial Prince 24 Falcon is hosting Hoedown, which will happen May 4th, 8 p.m. at the BRB. And all of those shows are a benefit for Legacy Community Health Services and assist hers through Coronation 25. Then over with the Imperial Court of Houston. They just finished up a great show tonight at EJ's. I was passed over for Passover, and that was hosted by Chanel Cartier and Judy Reeves. Both of their Imperial husbands are doing Passover stuff this weekend. So that show raised $820, which was pretty phenomenal. And with ICOH, every Wednesday evening at 8:30, 9 o'clock is the week midweek madness show over at EJ's. Stop by for some kind of fun jukebox type shows. And the next Sunday, the 27th, ICOH is doing a show for the Bayou City Women's Chorus at the BRB at 7 p.m., hosted by Her Most Imperial Majesty, Gemini Empress Rose. And one last thing I've got here is Kindred Spirits. The committee invites you to the 7th Annual Kindred Spirits Celebration, happening April the 26th from 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. at the Edwin Hornberger Center. That's at Holcomb and Maine. Yes, that's where it is, Holcomb in Maine. And it's been more than, this comes from Nancy Ford, senior editor of Outsmart magazine, it's been more than 28 years since Kindred Spirits first opened its doors, and almost two decades since those doors closed. Soon, the gargantuan multi-clubbed, now closed ranch, became the hub for local lesbians, further expanding the idea that a woman's bar needn't look like a bomb shelter. Now it's the Chance's G-Spot newborn triplex in the heart of Montrose that carries the torch that Marion Coleman lit. In the 1980s, Houston had no gay community center, no gay coffee shops. Houston had one little gay bookstore that wasn't a porn shop. The very few gay organizations that existed had even fewer places to meet. On any given night, a thirsty customer might walk into Kindred Spirits to find a politically motivated meeting going on in one corner, a softball team setting batting lineup in another, auditions for an upstart gay theater company in yet another. Without question, Kindred Spirits was a precursor to, if not the birthplace of, many current community organizations that thrive today. So every year, the people involved with Kindred Spirits celebrate that spirit that Kindred Spirits was, and have a big do over at Edwin Hornberger. So that's next Sunday night. Chris, you've got some stuff.
Yeah. A Lasting Legacy resale outlet warehouse sale will be on Sunday, April 27th, from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Ooh, I think I can get up early for that.
Well, it does go till 1 p.m.
Yeah.
It's at 1006 Taft Street at West Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Proceeds benefit Legacy Community Health Services. Cash only, no refunds or exchanges, no early bird specials. Resurrection MCC wants to let you know that there will be a new members class on this Sunday from 12:30 to 3:30. Lunch will be served. The Reverend Janice Ladd will guide a lively presentation. They are also inviting you to their 36th anniversary celebration, which is only 1 week away, on April 25th. At 7 p.m., there will be a free screening of the award-winning documentary Call Me Troy. The Reverend Troy Perry will be their guest. On Saturday, April 26th at 7 p.m., the Fool Music and Drama Ministry will present Sanctuary, a concert that tells the Resurrection MCC story. This journey of music and drama will take us from the beginnings in Montrose through the Decatur years to our present and future. On Sunday, April 27th at 9:11, the Imagine Campaign Victory Sunday. The Reverend Elder Troy Perry will be the guest for the weekend. He'll preach. And they'll be announcing the results of the Imagine Campaign. That's all from Resurrection MCC, which you can find them on the web at www.resurrectionmcc.org. The Gay, Lesbian, Switchboard Houston is accepting applications for the next training session in May. Because the training encompasses three consecutive weekends, we're only able to hold the trainings a couple times a year. The next training will be May 3rd and 4th, May 10th, May 17th, and the 18th. Volunteers must go through the entire training and strongly recommend that it be done in person. Trainings held on the 17th and 18th are mandatory. They include crisis intervention and role-playing. Volunteers assist callers requesting help or information on referrals to GLBT organizations and friendly businesses, coming out issues, suicide prevention, sexual assault, domestic partner abuse and violence, hate crimes, HIV counseling and case management, chemical dependency treatment, and general therapy referrals. For more information, you can go to gayswitchboardhouston.org or call them up at
529-3211. You know, that's pretty amazing, because when I was with the switchboard, we had a training, and I thought it was pretty extensive, and it was just for two weekends. But I know that since the switchboard is now part of the Montrose Counseling Center, they do a whole lot more things than we were able to do. So I'm glad to see that they're doing that. But that's pretty extensive, three weekends.
Theater New West takes great pride in presenting Eve Ensler's The Vagina Monologues at the Montrose Counseling Center, 401 Brainerd, first floor, on May 9th through the 31st. In a unique twist in celebration of the 10th anniversary of this theatrical phenomenon, the production will be performed by members of Houston's transgendered community.
Wow.
The Vagina Monologues is a poignant and hilarious tour of the last frontier, the ultimate forbidden zone. It's a celebration of female sexuality in all of its complexity and mystery. Hailed as the Bible for a new generation of women, it's been performed in cities all across the world and at hundreds of college campuses, and has inspired a dynamic grassroots movement, V-Day, to stop the violence against women. Director Joe Watts saw a documentary of a Los Angeles production of the show with an entire male-to-female transgendered cast. He decided he would like to do something similar, but he decided the Houston cast would not be limited to just male-to-female. The auditions were open to female-to-male, male-to-female, as well as drag queens. Our intent is no way meant to sensationalize the transgender community, but to give them a voice, one of better understanding, acceptance, dignity, clarity, and beauty. A preview will be held on Thursday, May 8th, as a fundraiser for the Counseling Center. Curtain time is 8 p.m., and tickets are $35 for the benefit performance. In order to reserve your tickets for the benefit, you may pay online through Network for Good website to the Vagina Monologues. And they even wrote one specifically for the transgendered community for that performance.
Oh, really? Really?
That when they performed it, it was I think it was five women who gave part of it,
mm-hmm.
and there were parts of it that were that most transgenders could relate to.
Yeah,
one of those that performed in that was Calpurnia Adams.
Oh yes,
and so there was part in there with her boyfriend who was in the service who was killed.
Barry
when
Winchell.
They found out.
Barry Winchell.
Barry Winchell. You can see that part there. I know it's airing right now on Logo, the presentation of
mm-hmm.
of that. Spry Socials. Seniors preparing for Rainbow Years. Ever since the Montrose Counseling Center launched Spry, they've heard that many would like to participate in organized events for GLBT seniors. The first social will be May 8th, act-out performance of Gershwin's An American in Paris. Later this month, the Spry Social Group will attend the Bayou City Women's Chorus presentation of Echoes of Women at Bering UMC. For more information, you can contact Ben Morgan at 713-529-0037, extension 350, or Della Cummings at extension 363. Spry is part of the Montrose Counseling Center. You can find them on the web at montrosecounselingcenter.org. Can you dig it? Hustle down to Funky Town. The 16th Annual Hatch Alternative Prom will be held on Friday, June 3rd. We'll expect to see a lot of 70s attire to go along with the theme. It's inspired by the Houston Pride Houston theme, We Are Family. Prom is a great event that's fun for everyone and supports the Hatch program as well. Promise free to all gay, lesbian, bisexual, and questioning youth and their allies ages 13 to 20. Many don't attend their own school dances because they're afraid of being teased or even physically abused by their peers. The special invitation extended to all GLBT adults who have not had the same opportunity to attend their own high school prom dressed as they wish or with a same-sex date. Anyone over the age of 21 who wasn't able to attend their own prom or anyone who would like a chance can do it again for a donation of $25. And the Pastoral Alternative Prom will be held at the Montrose Counseling Center, 401 Brainerd Street, on the first floor. Dress as you wish, wear a tux or a gown, wear a costume, come and drag. And these are
yes.
Fiesta time celebrating Cinco de Mayo. Mr. Tony's Corner Pocket 2008 Cubby Christopher Prado will be doing on Sunday, May 4th over at Tony's Corner Pocket. We'll be doing a benefit benefiting ICUH Reign 6 Charities and PWA Holiday Charities. Tony's Corner Pocket is at 817 West Dallas. Mother of Montrose Contest is now at EJ's.
Yes.
And that will be on May 11th.
Mother's Day.
At 5 p.m. You can pick up, if you want to compete in this, the applications are with the bartenders at EJ's.
Yes, rush over and get some before they're all gone.
Contest will be judged on presentation, talent, question and answer. You have to have 1 year of community service and must hold 2 fundraisers as Mother of Montrose within the first 60 days.
Okay.
That's
Yeah. Okay. Some of those are far into the future.
Yeah.
I know one of those is talking about the PWA campout, which is also happening Mother's Day weekend. We'll be talking about that in later on. So, what you got?
I don't know. We have our...
No, actually. So, we probably should go to some music.
Well.
No. Well, I'm saving that. This is one, number 8 from Mel Brooks' musical Young Frankenstein that I've seen.
Frankenstein. Have you never seen the movie?
It's pronounced Igor.
Frankenstein.
Number 8. I've seen a couple of different drag queens do this number, so it's becoming a favorite among the drag queens, so it's probably pretty outrageous.
8. And we'll go to a little music, and we will be back.
Okay.
Love comes when you least suspect it. Love dances in on a whim. I thought maybe I could direct it, but I never expected a guy like him. He was a bully and a brute. He was as crazy as a coot. Still I didn't give a hoot. He was my boyfriend. With every woman he would flirt. He always treated me like dirt, but I was happy to be hurt. He was my boyfriend. I was as pure as a virgin meadow, lying fit fitter in the gloam. Then he turned to me, that charmer, whispered, "Let's play farmer," and plowed me till the cows came home. He was a monster and a beast. His midnight bangings never ceased. It didn't faze me in the least. He was my boyfriend. I'll never forget the first time I met Victor. It was on the village green at the annual Bock Beer Festival, where every beer cost a buck. I was an innocent young lamb, and he was a dirty old goat. We were made for each other. All of a sudden, he took out his paraphernalia and shouted, "Let's play croquet!" And off to the field we went. He carried his hoops and mallets, and I carried his balls. Oh, what a festival! Fun and games all day long. Archery, badminton, potato sack. Victor won the three-legged race all by himself. It was love at first sight. He was a bond that I gave my heart to, but we never wed even so. If I mention wedlock, he puts me in a headlock. When I asked to be his wife, he stabbed me with a kitchen knife. Ah, friend, it's a good time to go. If he had an angry fit, I was the first thing that he hit. But I didn't give a shit. He was my boy.
And what song was that that you picked, Jimmy?
He was my boyfriend from Young Frankenstein. Yes.
That's the sound of me washing my hands.
I thought that was... Oh, wait, never mind.
Welcome back, darling.
You're very welcome.
All right. Let's play the opening theme and get ready into our next segment.
Welcome to the colored section. Welcome to the Negro League. Sign your name on a blacklist and know this, it's American history. See what it is to be blackmailed.
Blackmailed.
See a real life. Sign your name on a blacklist and know this, it's American history.
Thank you for joining me, Christopher Evans, on Black on Black on KPFT this morning. I am delighted to be here and to be back and to see everybody's shining faces. Was there an Eskimo in here last? Because it is cold in here.
Well, here's the funny story about it.
Uh-huh.
We complained for about a month that it was too hot.
Okay.
And we sent them a picture of the thermometer in here saying it was 80 degrees.
Uh-huh.
Because they kept saying, everything's working fine, everything's working fine. Well, the next week we come in, it goes from 80 degrees to 69 degrees.
Okay. We're going to go through it, but if you see these two little buttons sticking out of my shirt, they're not buttons. We are going to go back to something that we've covered before in Black on Black, and it is masculinity versus manhood. We did a dialogue last Saturday with a group that I belong to, Brother to Brother, and it was quite interesting. I loved it, and how we opened up was we started with a statement made by a very prolific image from Black history, and the statement says, long conditioning process which builds insecurity in the American male has created certain hang-ups which work to frame male homosexuality as a threat to Black masculinity. Sometimes our first instinct is to want to hit the homosexual because we're afraid we might be homosexual, and we want to hit the woman or shut her up because we're afraid she might take the cojones that we might not have had to start with. That was actually stated by Huey P. Newton of the Black Panthers back in August of 1970. And he was trying to make the statement that maybe a homosexual could be the most revolutionary. And I found that quite interesting that he would come to that conclusion, being a iconic. Well, he's an iconic figure now, but well on his way to being an iconic figure at the time, that he would make such a statement, because the Black Panthers represented, I think in totality, what black male masculinity was, desired to be. So we went through a list of different subject matters, and I think what was very important was is that people get an understanding of the language that we're using, the terms that we're using, because a lot of times people are using terms, but they are not understanding the history behind it or what the actual definition is. So we went through the terms feminine, masculine, masculinized, effeminate, and what was interesting is that a lot of them had no idea that effeminate or effeminacy had a definition, or part of its definition is marked by weakness and excessive refinement. And a lot of them found that interesting, although some of them already projected that on the term. It was just interesting that in its definition, the marked by weakness and excessive refinement part was in there. We went into labeling, and what your personal philosophy was on labeling. And joining me in the studio again tonight is Mr. Randolph Littleton. So he will be co-hosting with me to help me through this. So I wanted to ask him if he had any philosophy or your personal philosophy on labels. I think labeling, in terms of people or the people that we come into contact with, some of them are good, some of them are bad. Whether or not we can do without them is a total, I think it's up to individuals whether or not to figure that, because some people receive them. If I tell you you're handsome, you accept that label and you gladly relish in it. But if I tell you you're selfish and you're disconcerting, you don't accept that label. Or if I call you a derogatory name such as the N-word or the F-word, you don't accept those. But there's some we accept, some we don't. So do you have an all-encompassing philosophy as far as labels are concerned, or do you prescribe to labels, or you don't prescribe to labels?
Good morning, listeners.
He said good morning, listeners.
I think for me, trying to wake up early this morning, to think about labels, I think it's a matter of choice and, oh gosh, self-esteem has a lot to do with it. I mean, we can choose to accept or deny the label. It is a personal choice. I think most labels, whether they're negative or positive, have an impact on the audience who are receiving them. So for me personally, I personally ponder over them and try to wonder why a certain label has been defined or actually rendered to me at a particular time. I kind of gauge it a little bit and say, hey, yeah, of course I'm beautiful, you know. I feel that. But then there are times when people say things that I think we should question them when it comes to certain labels.
Okay.
Like, you know, and I think that where it really needs to start. And then we can place ownership about the label if we choose to. It's a personal choice.
Okay. I'm currently reading A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose by Eckhart Tolle. I don't know if anybody out there is reading this book, but it's a really good book, and Eckhart Tolle really concentrates on the ego, and he identifies labels as identity enhancers, which I found very interesting. And in a portion of this book on page 36, he talks about what keeps the so-called consumer society going is the fact that trying to find yourself through things doesn't work. The ego satisfaction is short-lived, and so you keep looking for more. You keep buying more. And I think a lot of times that goes back, or can go back, to what we are talking about now, which is labels. I have been caught in that cycle of label as far as body identification. You want people to identify you as good looking and buffed and all of these things. And so I found myself in the gym for hour and a half, not really for me or for health reasons, but because I knew Splash was coming up or a Pride event was coming up or I was going out of town, and you wanted people to apply this label to you. Oh, he's buffed and big and good looking. And it just doesn't satisfy, because as soon as the event was over, I would go back over to French's Chicken and get a 4-piece with a biscuit and a mound of French fries. And so I'd be back in the same hole. Again, we went on to talk about in the meeting, which is more important to you, how people perceive your masculinity or how people perceive your manhood. So what we started off with was asking all of the gentlemen in the room to give 5 things in 30 seconds that identified them as a man. And it was quite interesting. There was a certain mix in there. But we actually tried to get them to give a definition of masculinity and manhood. And I simply told them that masculinity was image and manhood is integrity. Some people argued with it. Some people didn't agree. It's all about personal opinion. But when it boils down to it, in actuality, masculinity is exactly all about image, and manhood is simply your integrity. Do you have any comment on does that definition make sense to you, or does it ring true for you, or do you have another definition for masculinity and manhood?
No, I really do agree with you. I think that, you know, there is definition and terms for everything, and we do need to develop an understanding of why we're saying certain things, especially if they become very meaningless and we don't have any backbone to describe the terms.
Mm-hmm.
So that now that we're going beneath the cause of why people are saying certain things that can reflect a very, very negative tone to it if we don't understand where it's coming from. And needless to say, it's going back to what we were talking about with labels and descriptions and all this other kind of stuff. It's understanding how they originate. I think I'm more accepting of understanding if I knew what it meant.
Okay.
Rather than just transferring what I've heard from someone else or simply saying something I heard that sounds good at the time, maybe.
Okay.
I think what how you define it is it's very well. I mean, even makes me put it into context and develop an understanding of what people are saying. And oh gosh, it reminds me of a time where, and I just watched a show too, pretending that I knew what was being said by a college professor at one point when I was at school, and he was actually giving me a compliment, and I can't think of the word right now, but it had something to do with intelligence, and he used some type of foreign word, and I was like, I started immediately letting him have it. I said, oh, professor, that's not true, and I'm blah, blah, blah. He said, I don't know if I just gave you a compliment. Okay. So going back to what you were saying is understanding what people are saying. Breaking it down is a good thing today. We need more clarification and understanding what people are saying so that we can relate. So I agree with you. I think that those terms are how you just defined them sound great to me.
Okay, and I think what has happened is as I've gotten older, I've become more and more comfortable with my own masculinity, whatever scale it's on or whatever scale people feel that it's on. But I'm more concerned about my manhood, which I identify as or relate to my integrity. So I'm certainly on a good path, and I encourage anyone, if you're out there, this book is really good. Eckhart Tolle, A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. It's really, really a good book, and there's some stuff in here concerning your ego and those labels. And we were talking about last night at the party, The Secret. I haven't read The Secret yet. Do you have any insight on The Secret?
Actually, it's a really good book. And the reason why I say that is because it's really everyday knowledge that we run across. It just describes the importance of just the basic understanding of basic principles of developing an understanding of yourself. And going back, the more and more you read these different books, the more and more it ties into you identifying who you are and not letting others identify who you are. And taking the time out to say, hey, you know, maybe I do need to probably look at this, or maybe I probably do need to work on this.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to the book, The New Earth, I think it's all about the same thing. Basically describing principles that we really, really need to examine, self-examine.
Okay.
And run with it. I mean, there's a day and time where we really, really need to work on taking a self-assessment of ourselves, re-examining some of the things that we don't really understand, and running with it. And enjoying it. I mean, okay. It doesn't have to be a bad thing. I mean, me reading The Secret, I was in awe on some of the things that I really, really hadn't looked at over, you know, as far as life is concerned with me.
Okay.
And it's more like a, maybe I could use this to change my perception of the negativity that's in my life.
Okay.
And make it where I can turn it around, because there are people personally with The Secret I've run across that they have reasons for saying certain things to you.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing me and you were just talking about earlier today was we want to look at our ego first.
Exactly.
It's an attack on us, and personally I don't really think it has anything to do with us. I think there's a reason behind what has been said or done to us, and we can change how we receive that feedback. Basically going back to what we were talking about earlier, whether it's positive or negative.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people come across and tell me, you are a great person, blah blah blah, despite the fact of you being homosexual. Well, homosexuality has nothing to do with me as a person, but okay, maybe there's a reason why they lack an understanding of what it's truly about. But then I have people who say, well, you're a very handsome person, but why are you? And it goes back to you saying to yourself, this is who I am. And people have, they want to ask you questions at times when it comes to homosexuality, and I think they're trying to identify on the terminology, and it ties in what we're talking about, is the different labels that they have heard or the stereotyping that mm-hmm. they've heard, and they're seeking knowledge. And we run with it as an attack at times, but really some people are just seeking an understanding of an individual, meaning you or me.
Okay. We are also looking at the difference between prejudice and preference. And during our dialogue with Brother to Brother, I was trying to relay to them that some people have a thought process that if a masculine guy walks through the door or an effeminate guy walks through the door, that innately the masculine guy is better than the effeminate guy. And I was trying to tell them that is a prejudice, but a lot of people had a hard time in the group trying to break up that difference or identify that difference. So we are going to but for the rest of the year, really try to identify internal prejudice against one another, and actually trying to learn the difference between prejudice and preference in our own thought process when we first encounter people. It is not long before we take internal self-hatred and we start externalizing it and projecting it on other people. I wanted to go into MW Moore's new book too, called Internal Chaos. So if you're out there, if you have an opportunity, it's on Amazon.com. You can go out and get the book. But this book, Internal Chaos, addresses a lot of those issues concerning manhood and masculinity. This picks up, or this book picks up where his first book left off, which was entitled For What I Hate, I Do. And in the book, Internal Chaos, the main character is now in jail, and one of his greatest fears is having to come into contact with an effeminate male. Well, when they put him in his prison cell, he's in with a drag queen. So this book very much addresses his journey in finding out the difference between manhood and masculinity. And I don't want to give a lot away from the book, but the conclusion, one of the conclusions that he comes to, is that although a drag queen, the masculinity, or the manhood that's represented or projected by this drag queen, is foremost and maybe more so than most men that he's actually in prison with. And so coming up on the age of, coming up on the age of 38, I am just now really getting a good grasp on my masculinity and my manhood, and feeling comfortable exhibiting those within their own confines for me, instead of trying to make sure that what I'm projecting is perceived as such from people on the outside. And what I wanted to relay also was, is that most of my issues concerning my masculinity and manhood only comes to surface when I'm dealing with other black men. I know, in an effort to be received and incorporated by my brothers or someone that looks like me, I would at times change some things about me, change my mannerisms a little bit, or change how I walk or how I communicate, in an effort to be received and accepted by my brothers, regardless of what their sexuality was. And then to detail that even more when it came to dealing with other same gender loving black men, I found that even more of a stretch to do, or a task to do, instead of being most comfortable with brothers who identified as I did. I was finding myself even more stressed out trying to incorporate myself and be received by them. So that dialogue at brother to brother was really, really good. We also talked about what does the term straight acting imply beyond assumably straight heterosexual by general public perception and standards. You hear this term all the time, especially if you're surfing the internet. I'm straight acting. And actually what the term implies is that all same gender loving men are effeminate, or don't act, or don't carry the character traits that heterosexual men do naturally. So one of the other questions was, is masculinity naturally restricted to only heterosexual men? And of course it's not, but I think as same gender loving men, as black men, and that's what we're talking about. And somebody got on me about, well, you're always ascribing these labels to black men. Well, hell, that's who I am, so that's what the conversation is going to be centered around. But do you think masculinity is naturally restricted to only heterosexual men?
No. I think that heterosexual men actually are in conflict with themselves, too.
How so?
Everyone doesn't play sports. I know, okay. I don't. But I enjoy sports. Okay. I enjoy viewing sports. But there are heterosexual men who don't enjoy sports at all.
Okay.
I think what we struggle with here is we identify with labels, mm-hmm. when it comes to who we're seeking as a potential sexual partner, or maybe just a partner in general.
Okay.
That includes sex too, but I'm just saying there are two different situations going on here. You have the different labels, tops, bottoms, straight acting, bisexuality, all these type of things. I think people want to identify with separating themselves so that they can get with someone who feels the same. And instead of just saying, you know, basically giving, you never know, a person that may label themselves effeminate may be the person you're looking for. So, but a lot of people don't agree with this, but this is so that we can narrow down some potential candidates that we may not be interested in, instead of giving them an opportunity to have that face-to-face or the conversation, and then to go from there, we immediately start saying, okay, we want athletic fit, we want slim, we want this, 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 and this. And basically, heterosexuals do the same thing. You know, they want a, maybe a, I don't know what they're looking for. It's probably the same thing. I don't know. I can't lie and say I do, but okay. Most of them are probably looking for a well-to-do individual. I don't know. That's, we need to have a heterosexual in here, Christopher. It's too early in the morning.
It's too early in the morning.
To try to figure out what they do, but I know that.
I got to step in real quick.
Okay.
You know what I got to do, don't you?
Yes, I do.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston 90.1 FM, and Galveston 89.5 FM.
I love his voice. I wish I could have that voice.
Just download the archive and you can just play it in the background all the day for you.
And over and over and over again. I might try that. We are, again, we're here and we're discussing, again, masculinity and manhood. And again, this is a prevalent issue, and it's not going away anytime soon. And in order to make the strides that we're looking for, I believe that we really have to teach our young men, our adolescent men, the difference between the two. I've done seminars where you have 45, 50-year-old men with sons who can't tell the difference between masculinity and manhood, and they're passing that insanity down to their sons. There is a gentleman by the name of Gillis Triplett, and he makes the statement that the subtle subversion of manhood has taken place right under our noses. Yet because it was done in such a crafty and cunning manner, most people, including most clergy, missed it. What does the subverted version of manhood look like? The subverted version of manhood convinces a male that he has reached the pinnacle of manhood when he has proven these things. He has the ability to make money and acquire wealth. He has the ability to acquire male status symbols. He has an admirable physique. He has athletic prowess on the court, field, rink, or diamond. He is versed in exploiting women sexually. He has the ability to successfully shrug responsibilities. He has the ability to make babies. He has the ability to hold his liquor. He has the ability to handle his drug use. He has the wherewithal to get away with criminal acts. He has the ability to control or manipulate others. He has the ability to beat the system. He is over 18 years of age. He is a bona fide thug, rapper, shot caller, baller, and he has the ability to handle incarceration. And a lot of these identifiers are actually related back to, or can go back to, you're gonna get slammed, to the not hip-hop culture, because hip-hop culture did not identify with these, but back to what has been introduced into the hip-hop culture through the venue of some types of music. The hip-hop culture, it started off early on in its early formative years as a very positive format, and a format used to reflect what inner city black youth were going through during that time period. But a lot of this has been translated into popular culture right now. And so what we're looking to do, and what Gillis Triplett is looking to do, is to certainly change that around. because at this point in time, education does not identify as what manhood is, or your loyalty to your community, or your conviction to your community, or to what you give back to the community. So I certainly applaud him for coming out with this list, because when we were at the dialogue for Brother to Brother, a lot of the men were screaming out, well, I don't identify with this, and I don't receive this label, since that's what we were talking about in the full context. However, these labels are not only labels, but they are an identification, or I'll say description, of actually what's going on right now with our youth, with the incarceration rate. So although we may not want to receive them as labels, they do describe the state that we're in right now, especially for younger African American men. And we were trying to come up with some solutions on how do you reverse the tide that we're going in right now, when you hear some of the acts that are committed against other black males by black males. And the only way to do that is we have to go out and we have to mentor, even in the face of people that don't want to receive mentorship. And a lot of that starts off by what we promote and what we accept. And I think a lot of it goes back to, a lot of people wanted to blame the media, but the media only feeds what people are buying. And if we stop buying into a lot of these descriptions, or not descriptions, if we stop buying into the glorification of some of these things, I think the media will turn around and not promote this as much. I know Alicia Keys currently has gotten some flap about her comment that gangster rap was invented by the government to encourage black people to kill themselves. So she's been on a couple of talk shows and has given some rebuttals that's not what she was meaning. What she actually meant was is that the glamorization of the word gangster rap, it took on a whole new life of itself through the media and the government, and was used to suggest that some of the behavior that was being exhibited among black males towards one another was a prime came from gangster rap, which really was not. But gangster rap is nothing more than entertainment for those that are making the money from it. But for those who don't have the money, who look at it as a source of voice, it has taken on a life that I think has grown really bigger than what they anticipated. So I would like for someone to play a song for me from Ledisi. And the title of that song is Lost and Found. And the reason why I love this song is there the words actually go beyond her talking about a romantic love, but Lost and Found talks about finding a self-love that sustains and carries you. So if we could get that on, please, Ledisi. And if you have not picked up this CD, you need to pick up this CD, Ledisi, Lost and Found. Absolutely wonderful CD. She was actually nominated for a Grammy for this CD. She didn't win, but it really did put her on the map. So, again, this is Ledisi, Lost and Found.
Again, please someone find me.
Thank you. I absolutely, again, love that song, Legacy Lost and Found, which is the title of the CD. We are in the studio with Black on Black with our guest Randolph, speaking about masculinity and manhood, or masculinity versus manhood. And in actuality, I don't think there has to be a competition between the two. I think that they can actually coexist within each of us peacefully. But we really have to get an understanding of the difference between the two. One of the points that was trying to be made is that masculinity is not a universal concept, or everyone doesn't understand it the same, because what's masculine to Caucasian men may not be as masculine to African American men, or to Asian men, or to Latino men. So it's very cultural, and we were trying to get an understanding during the dialogue of why masculinity was such an important part of the African American community. And I think a statement by Cornel West actually summed it up very well. And in essence, what Cornel West said was, is that during the slavery and Jim Crow before civil rights, masculinity was about the only thing that black males had to hold on to, was their masculinity. And then once we started coming into civil rights and supposedly coming into equal representation in America, we have failed to drop that mentality where that's the only thing that we have or can hold on to. So the African American community has continued to elevate masculinity to this platform that it is an extreme identifier. This is what makes you an African American male, is your ability to exude this certain type of masculinity. And then with the entertainment industry, it's actually been catapulted to this hyper masculinity, which is exhibited in our music, and music plays such a huge part of the African American experience, because it's been used to relay and to let people know, or to show the world that this is where we're at in our walk, or this is where we're at in our struggle. So music plays such a big part that we take that music and we internalize it more so than just entertainment. And so when internalizing it more so than entertainment, we've taken what music says about us even more to heart. So it is certainly important that we get out to our young men the difference between these two. There is a question about have you made personal changes in your dress, appearance, walk, or talk to accommodate the upsurge in the popularity of a more masculine black male? And I have to admit that maybe about 2 years ago, when I think that the height of this was coming on the scene, I think I did, because you wanted to be seen, you wanted to be a part of the group, so you kind of, you know, bought a couple of extra pair of jeans, and you bought some Timberlands, and in order to fit in. And not to say that that can't be a part of what someone just naturally wants to wear or be a part of, but I think when you start adopting that in order to fit in, then there is a problem, not with that situation, but with you trying to adopt something that maybe you're not. But if you find that way of dress and that culture appealing to you, then by all means go for it. But if you're doing it just to fit in and feel like you're a part, then you're messing with your identity and you're not being who you are, and you have to be very careful when you start treading in that area. But I think we've spoke on our African American male held to a different benchmark of masculinity versus their Anglo-Saxon counterpart, Asian counterpart, or Latino counterpart. Do you think that there is a different benchmark for masculinity for African American men versus other men in other cultures?
I don't think it's as deep as I don't think that it is deep. I honestly, really honestly don't.
Okay.
Being involved with conversations with other backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, I don't seem to recall the struggles of defining themselves.
Okay.
And in fact, I think that they're definitely a little bit, and it goes back to what you were talking about earlier about upbringing and how we were raised. I think it has a lot to do with our choices that we were giving and our learning experiences. I think that everybody's learning experiences are define who they are, because most of what's going on right now is what's been taught in the homes.
Okay.
And I don't think that they've had much of a struggle. I think that they've always been taught to be, I'm free. And I think with African-American people in general, I think we struggle with defining freedom within ourselves.
Okay.
And we are entitled certain liberties and things, but internal conflict, and this is going back to your book again with the internal chaos, is understanding that everybody grows up with a different type of understanding of freedom. I guess that will be the pivotal of the conversation, is how much freedom do we have in how we define ourselves? Most of the people I went to school with in high school, you know, different ethnic backgrounds, they never discussed some of the things that I often heard about or struggle with.
Okay.
in my cultural background. And I find it fascinating that, you know, when I did bring up certain conversations such as what we're having today, they would be, I guess the word would be, aloof about it.
Okay. 'Cause
they wouldn't understand it. They were like, how is that? So I think we are very critical about certain aspects, and I would narrow it down to African-American homosexuals, but it just doesn't end there. I think it's most African-American people who did not grow up with certain freedoms or weren't taught that they are entitled to certain freedoms.
Okay. We were talking about effeminate men, and even I believe someone brought up the instance of drag queens. That in essence actually is is walking in freedom. And they would, some of the guys were having a difficulty in understanding, but the ability to be who you are, mm-hmm, in face of a culture that would prefer you to fit into a box, that is absolutely total freedom, and being able to walk into that freedom. We did a dialogue with the Men's Gathering of Houston some years ago, and I believe people have heard me tell this story. One of the gentlemen was asked, one of the heterosexual men on the panel was asked, what was his initial perception of a man he perceived as homosexual. So his thing was, and we told him to be honest, he said weak was the first thing that he thought of. So he went into his explanation of why, and he felt that being an effeminate man, you were dodging your responsibilities as a man, that it was easier for you to pretend to be a female than to step up to the plate to be a man. So one of the gentlemen in the audience stood up and said, he's actually been on the show before, and he asked him, he says, how much strength do you think it takes for me, looking the way that I look, with the characteristics that I have, to walk the streets of Third Ward in broad daylight and at night? How much strength do you think it takes for me to be a part of a community that would rather me hide away during the day and the night? He says, it takes a lot of strength for me to be me in the face of people like you. And the heterosexual gentleman on the panel really thought about that. And maybe about 20 minutes later, he said he wanted to make a statement. And he said he had never understood it that way. And so I think that's the type of revelation and dialogue that we're looking for, especially between heterosexual and same gender loving brothers, that we get an understanding that we may have a question about each other's masculinity, but let's respect each other's manhood, because my manhood you don't know about until you have dealings with me. You don't know what type of person I am or man I am until you actually have dealings with me. So that was very important dialogue at that point. But how do you think the mentorship portion of what needs to go on can go on, especially with young men, if we're talking about 14, 15 and up to their early 20s? How do you think we can come to the table with mentorship, especially in the face of individuals or situations where individuals don't seemingly want to be mentored? How do you think you actually get them to a stage where they start absorbing more than what they see on BET 106 in Park, or what they catch in hip hop videos, or what they maybe discuss between each other? Just talking, how do you inject mentorship in the face of situations where people maybe don't want to receive it or reluctant to receive it?
Well, you can't really help anyone who's reluctant to receive anything. I think it has to be an individual choice. If the person is seeking guidance, they'll find it. And I mean, I've been in a position where I mentor young individuals, but they were seeking it. I mean, there were opportunities in the community. There were different self-help groups. There are things that nowadays they're allowing people to have certain groups in high school, which was not common when I was growing up, where they can express themselves and seek guidance from different professional people who are age that can assist them in making some of the decisions that they're going to come across. And I think for youth, some of the things that they have been exposed to have been things that are either negative or positive stereotype off television. But the youth nowadays is a little bit different than when I was growing up. I think now they can probably mentor me. It's a situation where we're helping each other understand each other. And I think we confuse that with one being the older person and one being the young person. I can learn from that young person too, on what's going on in today's world, and develop an understanding of how it can relate to where I'm at right now. You know, going back to what we were talking about is both the New Earth and the Secret is being able to identify with people we come across. It's the law of attraction. Some of the things that the youth are experiencing today, it did kind of frighten me at first. Kind of shocking, because I wasn't at a point in my life where I could be as free as they are. Mm-hmm. And they have been exposed to expressing themselves a little bit more. Every generation, there's a change. There's more freedoms. There's more situations where they can express themselves without having to identified labels.
Okay, but do you think there's just such thing as excessive freedom?
Whether it's negative or bad, I think that a person is still trying to identify themselves. And I think what, for me, they're doing things that I thought that I would never do. But then, in essence, have I ever wanted to do some of the things? And I'm not saying all. Have I ever wanted to do some of the things? Hold hands with a potential person that I'm dating in high school? Yes. Go to prom with a potential partner? Yes. Or even my partner? Yes. And I think for me, they open up an opportunity for me to consider thinking things out differently if I had an understanding. Mm-hmm. Just like they can't understand why we don't understand how to use our iPhone or our iPods.
Okay.
But once you sit down with one, they'll explain it to you. It depends on who you're sitting down with.
Okay, I think what I've come to an understanding is that each generation has a section or a portion of people who push the envelope,
yes,
who push the line, who break down the next barrier and the next door. And a lot of that has to entail some excess. There have to be people who push the envelope so much so till it's uncomfortable for both people on both sides. And I certainly do agree that there are some individuals in this new generation, I don't know what they're calling them now. They're still Generation X or whatever they're called, but they are absolutely necessary. How comfortable you are with it is certainly left up to you to find where you are. But you have to have people, I'm coming into the understanding, who push the envelope. Because there may have been someone looking at me who figured, oh, he's pushing the envelope, I'm not comfortable with that. And I'm feeling the same thing with some people. I'm like, ooh, pull back a little bit. But you have to make strides that are necessary. You have to push the envelope in that way. And it's not going to be a comfortable thing for everybody. But you want to enjoy where those boundary pushers have taken you, so you can enjoy it and then cringe at it at the same time. So to all of the boundary pushers, to people who push the envelope, who take it to the extreme, so that others of us who sit quietly on the sideline, who come behind you and enjoy what you've done, I certainly thank you for your persistence and your boldness. And that, in fact, when we're particularly specifically talking about men, that is manhood, your ability to step outside of the box and pass the normal boundaries. That is manhood. That's your integrity, to have something you think is worth fighting for and putting yourself out there for. There are a couple of things I want to promote, I guess. One of them is Winter Explosion 2009. If you go to www.winterexplosion.com, this is a yearly event. The next one will be in January 2009 in upstate New York. This year they had Patti LaBelle. In previous years they've had Rachelle Ferrell, Regina Bell. They were actually supposed to have Janet Jackson this year, but she got sick, had the flu or something like that. But if you could, please go to www.winterexplosion.com. It's an absolutely wonderful organization, and I'm actually looking at a guest registration form, and they allow you to do a payment schedule. You can do $100 for 5 months and have it paid in full by January 13th of 2009, but the prices are $5.95 for a double, $5.60 for a triple, $5.40 for a quad, and $710 for a single. And we've had a brother of ours to go for the last 5 years, and he's certainly elated to be bringing this to Houston for people to attend. So if you want, please go online, check out the payment schedule for that. I think you would really, really enjoy going to Winter Explosion. And again, the Men's Gathering of Houston, if you Google the Men's Gathering of Houston, you can find that information. And the Men's Gathering of Houston is a group for men, and meet bi-weekly at the Gay and Lesbian Transgendered Community Center. Where's the new center? Has it opened?
I'm sorry, what?
Where's the new center? Has it opened, the
Montrose, yeah, Counseling Center?
Is it Counseling Center?
Community Center.
The community center, I'm sorry.
The community center hasn't relocated
yet. It hasn't relocated yet, okay.
So it's still at 3400 Montrose.
Okay, thank you. So there.
At least they better not have moved.
No, they haven't.
They haven't moved and not tell you about it. Go ahead.
If they're still making the payments, I am the longest running tenant in the community center.
Did he just say if they're still making payments?
Yeah. But I've been part of a group that has been in the community center since it was the house over on Hawthorne.
Okay.
And I'm the only person who's been a continuous with organizations member since the beginning.
God, dog.
So I don't ever get any information.
You never. So if you could certainly check that out, The Men's Gathering of Houston. And again, you have to pick up M.W. Moore's book, Internal Chaos. Absolutely wonderful book. And also Eckhart Tolle, New Earth. A New Earth, Awakening to your Life's Purpose. And again, we are here for you. I have certainly enjoyed this. Again, manhood versus masculinity, and it's something that will be ongoing. And people have criticized me for saying, well, every time you come on, you're talking about some of my stuff, or it's negative. Well, there are different people for different things, and if you want to bring a different point of view, get your own show. That is what I discovered. Chris, you're nuts. That this is,
you're just figuring that one out.
Yeah,
for our listening audience, I gave him a snap.
But my passion is the emotional, spiritual, and mental health and rejuvenation and exaltation of same gender loving black men, that we become a loving group towards one another, that we become a shining example of what brotherhood can look like despite sexuality or preferences or the things that divide us now. So that is my mission, and that is my passion. So I implore you to join me in that, in doing that. And as Deion Sanders would say, don't talk about it, be about it. And I had dinner with Deion about 2 or 3 weeks ago. She's absolutely doing wonderful, and she's actually Dr. Deion Redmond at this point. So we certainly want to send out congratulations to her, and we'll certainly try to have her back on the show to give us an update of where she's at and how she's doing, and see if she can bring some more insight to her dedication to the African-American same gender loving community, which she was certainly a great part of and a great asset to. So this is Christopher Evans, your host of Black on Black, signing out with my guest Randolph Littleton, and we will see you again next month. And we certainly hope that we continue to grow, be prosperous, not only in tangibility but in spirituality, mentality, and emotional areas of our life.
Welcome to the colored section. Welcome to the Negro League. Sign your name on a blacklist and know this, it's American history. See what it is to be blackmailed.
Blackmailed.
See a real life. Sign your name on a blacklist and know this, it's American history.
Yeah. I get myself excited. It's a party now and I'm the only one invited. Standing tall at full attention. Gazing at my own reflection. Yeah, you know, without a doubt. If I keep to myself, you know I'd never leave the house. How come you don't love me as much as I love myself? How come you don't love me as much as I love myself? How come you don't please me as much as I please?
New music for After Hours from a group called Naked, N-E-K-K-E-D. How come you don't love me like I love myself? I thought that was kind of maybe an apropos song to introduce the next segment that we're having on right now. We've got some new folks in the studio. Yes. Let's see here. Why can't I hear you? There. Let's try that. Hello. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. And you are?
Justin. I've been on.
Yes, you have. Times. You've been here before, but you've got some new people with you.
I'm Justin Anderson. Mm-hmm. I'm an LPCI, licensed professional counselor intern. And I'm also the president-elect for Talgebatic, which is the Texas...
The what?
I'm getting to that. We all have our acronyms.
I see.
Be a little patient now.
Talgebatic.
Talgebatic.
I thought it was one of my Czechoslovakian cousins or something.
No. No, sorry.
Okay.
We're not that lucky here tonight. Yeah. Sorry. Talgebatic stands for the Texas Association of... Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender Issues in Counseling.
Okay.
And I'll take over as president of that organization this July.
Cool.
So,
who have you got with you?
With me, I have Woja and Adriana, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves.
Okay.
I'm Woja Flanagan, Master's of Science with a licensed psychological associate, and I have a practice here in Houston.
Can you tell me about Woja?
What do you want to know?
Is that a name? Are you Slavic born, or
it's actually a nickname?
Ah,
that I've been using for nearly 2 decades now.
Okay, would ya?
Yes,
gotcha.
And I'm Adriana Gill Wilkerson. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist associate,
mm-hmm.
and I practice at the Bering Support Network, which is right down the road from here.
It certainly is. It certainly is. It's a wonderful, wonderful institution. Do incredible things over there, especially for the gay community.
Right.
I'm involved in a fundraising organization. We're raising funds this year. Specifically for the dental clinic and the hospice over there. And that's only two of the many things that happen over
right.
at Bering Omega. Yeah. So, what are we talking about tonight? I mean, we've got some high-powered folks in here.
Oh,
and then we've got Virgin also.
Well, Virgin's always here.
No, I have to be.
He's like furniture now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like David. Come on.
It's like old furniture.
But I'm cuter.
Right.
He's like that furry couch from the 70s that you just can't seem to get rid of. But
exactly. You put it on the curb.
But it's so rare, you don't want to toss it out either.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just so comfortable.
Okay.
Wow. No. Okay.
Moving forward.
Moving on.
So, reason I wanted to bring this topic up mm-hmm. was there's a lot of issues in counseling. Been working with counseling with GLBT population that are very unique, very specialized. Our population deals with higher rates of depression, drug dependency, alcoholism, suicidal ideation and suicide attempts, starting at from adolescence all the way through senior years. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to put together a panel of people to address, the issues, just create more awareness tonight. And also, people that would like to call in and ask us questions are welcome to call into the show.
And that number is?
And that number is 713-526-KPFT.
Mm-hmm.
And for those people that are a little on the dyslexic side, let me spell out that number for
Please
you.
Please do.
It's 713-526-5738.
That's
and
the number.
And I'm a little dyslexic myself, so I just wanted to make sure I said that did that right.
Oh, I've been listening. I've been hearing that number for 20 years now, so I would have corrected you.
Okay, good. So, last thing I need is someone with, 5783 so getting phone calls.
You just mentioned several issues about the gay community, and I mentioned a little bit earlier that not only this show, but a lot of gay media tries to put the picture out there that about the good side of the gay community and the good things that we do, and we tend to want to sweep other things under the rug, like drug use and domestic violence and all the other things and the depression and blah 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important, especially the three of you, to talk about these issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to shut up and let you do that.
Okay. Shall we start? Do you have any suggestions, Adriana? I can start with something.
Go ahead.
Okay. One thing that I've seen in working with patients or clients of the GLBT genre, or if you will, is I noticed there's a lot of shame. A lot of that comes from Western culture. A lot of that comes from Western religion. And just, the places shame will drive people. Could you have any reflections on that from your own experiences or your own practice?
I think that's a good point. A lot of my clients are struggling with their spirituality and their religion of origin, and a lot of the issues that they face are coming from their families that are rejecting them or friends who turn their back on them once they find out that they're out, or just different issues that do stem from religious and family of origin issues.
I think there's also an issue of sort of more subtle or unconscious shame, in that there's certain cultural norms of the GLBT community that are different from the mainstream community, and we often don't want to share those because we're afraid that we'll be seen as different, and so we tend to sort of hide those, and there's a certain pressure behind hiding those things.
Absolutely. Virgin, you're just sitting here. Would you like to add anything to that? Oh, come on, Ad, you can add something.
No.
Okay.
Sean could probably add something.
Thank you.
Well, I think in this community there are a lot of secrets.
Yes.
And that's where the struggle comes for some people, is that they are maintaining a secret sometimes, mm-hmm. or sometimes many secrets, and there's a lot of shame when people start finding out those secrets.
And I think we're also a community where we learn to keep secrets. Right. I mean, that's sort of the way we survive childhood and adolescence in particular, is learning secrets, and then even as we come to accept our own sexuality, we still learn to keep secrets.
And I think also back on the topic of shame, there's lots of, you know, it's very ingrained into our culture, even outside of the GLBT population. There's a lot of people that, you know, deal with, you know, they're ashamed of their family, or they're ashamed of, you know, that they aren't where they wanted to be in their life at this point in their life, you know, in their lives, whether it's career or they've made, you know, choices or mistakes or what have it in their lives. And our society tends to, you know, for lack of a better word, punish people, or at least make people feel like they don't belong, or ostracized, you know, push aside people that are a little bit different. So, but I'm getting those looks from like, oh,
it's dead air.
It's dead air.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't hear what she said.
That's okay, because nothing was said.
Okay.
You missed nothing, Jimmy.
I missed nothing. Okay. Sorry.
If you would have said penis, you'd be like, what? So.
But one thing that I'm working with is I work on at West Oaks Hospital on the weekends, and I work with adolescents. Generally, and when working with GLBT teenagers, you get a lot of specialized issues because they do deal with so many things that are, and they deal with different issues than the gay teenagers of 10, 20 years ago deal with, because they're coming out at earlier and earlier ages. You know, a lot of them are a lot stronger, I think, because there's more support in society, there's role models, you know, there's, you know, out and proud role models now, which I think definitely helped. But you still have a lot of bullying going on in schools, if you've ever looked at anything from GLSEN, that's the gay and lesbian Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. Listen, is that right?
I think that's right.
Okay. if someone wants, if I got that wrong, please call in and correct me on that, because it'd be fun to have someone else, you know, from the outside world call in too. So please call. I know. We're past the telethon thing that was going on a few weeks ago, which was very successful for KPFT, by the way. But
well, I would agree with you that teenagers that come out today, I mean, they definitely come out into a different world than I came out into 20 years ago. in fact, I mean, I think the sort of the interesting thing is that by coming out today, there's a lot more mainstream support for GLBT issues than there was when I came out in the 80s. But I think there's also, in a sense, less sort of pull to become a member of the GLBT community when you're 18, 17, because the pressure doesn't seem, in a sense, as tangible. I mean, when I came out at 17, there was clearly a danger in doing so. And so for me to be able to find a community was really important. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to find a community and immediately get a support, not just from my friends, but from people who were like me. And I think as coming out as a teenager today, you get that support from your friends more frequently and more easily, but there's not that community that you so quickly become a part of. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, in a sense, you end up missing out on a part of the coming out experience that can be very beneficial.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, because I'm thinking back on the clients with whom I work, and I don't think I have very many people that are working on coming out issues that are young. Most of the people who still have some sort of baggage about their coming out are a lot older, that were aware of their sexuality in the 80s, but maybe didn't come out until they were in their 40s or 30s. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that are dealing with more shame about coming out, not necessarily the young people. I think that there are a lot more resources out there, and mm-hmm. the community embraces them and tries to provide role models or different places to go.
True. I know one of my biggest concerns is with, especially with the, you know, this current administration's ban on proper sex education the last 8 years.
Right.
More specifically, abstinence-only sex education. You know, any growing up in the 80s and 90s, you know, condoms were drilled in as this, you know, say, as long as safe sex messages, and we haven't had those messages for the last, you know, the 8 years. And yeah, so you have teenagers now that, you know, like if they're 10 years old in 2000 and now they're becoming 18, their whole teenage, all these teenage years, all their teenage years, they've not, they've only been having abstinence only education. So now we have a whole, you know, generation here that's now entering a very sexual population, and they have know nothing of safe sex practices. They don't have those messages, you know, and they don't have the images of people wasting away and dying of HIV. HIV is a manageable, right. quote unquote, a manageable disease now.
Right. I think that the picture for adolescents sort of becoming active in a sexual community today is very different than what it was, again, when I was 18. 20 years ago, because, you know, people are taught it's a manageable disease, a manageable illness, and then they're not really taught what that means. I mean, to hear the phrase, well, it's a manageable illness, no one really explains that that means taking pills multiple times a day, having diarrhea on a daily basis, developing strange growths in your body, and that's what we call a manageable disease now, you know, which I will grant you is better than dying, you know, after 3 years, after infection. But it still sort of misses the picture, doesn't capture the whole picture of what it means to be HIV positive.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to be expecting just a Pandora's box about to be cracked open here over the next few years, because very much already I'm seeing, you know, in the adolescents that I see it, at work, I mean, we're talking, you know, straight identified teenagers are having sex, and I mean, you could look at the teenage birth rate. I mean, or teenagers having babies. I mean, it's not just Jerry Springer. It's just not Sally Jesse. This is, you know, stuff that
this is happening.
This is really happening.
I'm glad you brought that up, because at Bering, one of our main focuses is to work with the population that are HIV positive, infected, or affected. And I think we're seeing a big change and shift in who's coming in to receive services, psychological counseling, whatever you want to call it, services. We have a support group, and I think the geography of that group has been changing, even just in the time I've been there, which has been a short year right now. It's just amazing how many people are coming in, and so many young people are being affected.
How is it changing? What did it used to be? What is it now?
I think it was more of a gay population before, and I think lately, at least, we've gotten a few straight, you know, heterosexual, some older adults, and some younger, which mm-hmm. is just amazing to me, that just in the year that the face is changing
mm-hmm.
and it's visible.
I know it also at Bering is that Ruth, and I feel comfortable bringing up her name just because she does, she's starting her own organization, her own nonprofit.
Right.
For working with women specifically that are HIV positive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a whole area. There is actually, we're seeing a lot more women coming forward, and at Bering as well, I've
right.
noticed. And, you know, just saying, you know, I'm here and I need help. I need support. And I don't think, I'm not sure how many women, you know, came out. So, you know, the messages weren't necessarily there in the past.
Right.
That you know, there's support, there's help out here.
And I think it's difficult for women that are heterosexual identified that do come in, because they may look around and see mostly gay men and maybe feel like they're not welcome. But, you know, everyone is welcome at that group. And a lot of times it's just difficult for the changing face of HIV.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of, if you go to, like, AIDS Foundation Houston, a lot of the long-term survivors that are gay males, have, you know, have some issues with, you know, if, like, you know, 20 years ago when they went to Stone Soup, it was all gay men. Now it's families showing up for support. And, I mean, that's frustrating. I think a little bit frustrating for them that this is, you know, no longer, you know, one, that this is, these expanded so far, but also that it's, you know, it's the face of it's changing. And it's there's adjustments for everyone in society with that.
There is change, but you touched on something earlier about the lack of education.
Mm-hmm.
And what frustrates the hell out of me is to see, or to know of, to meet up with, because it's happened right here on the show, teenage gay men and gay men in their early 20s who are seroconverting. And it, to my way of thinking, that shouldn't be happening. But because of this no condom use thing going on, we're allowing or letting a whole generation of gay men become infected all over again. And something which you brought up is that since these young people, these young men, have never seen AIDS, they haven't been around death, they haven't seen how ugly it can be and how the horrible changes in your body, and they have no conception. All they see is these hunky-looking guys running up a mountainside, you know, taking their pills. Mm-hmm. And I'm here to tell you, after 25 years, you don't run up a mountain anymore. Because you're too busy swallowing 50 pills a day and dealing with the side effects. Mm-hmm. When will this administration get the hell out so we can get back to sane education? And not just for gay men, but for everyone. Because, like you said, you've got women coming in. I'm sure these women have no concept of condom use either, because they weren't taught it.
No, and they may not even be aware that their partners may be bisexual.
Sure.
Or, you know, experimenting.
Or experimenting or fooling around or,
right,
you know, hitting that arcade and doing whatever they do. And yeah.
I think one of our roles as mental health professionals, counselors, therapists, is to bring that awareness to everyone we work with and to make sure that that's discussed, because sometimes I hear clients talking about dangerous sexual practices and I feel like that's a good point of entry to talk about,
so
what
to speak,
protection and, yes, how to protect yourself, how to protect others.
And it takes a lot of strength to bring that up, too. I mean, as far as with the spring counselors, we almost have to a certain level, we have a, you know, it's part of our jobs in a way. But, you know, with your friends, with your family out there, I mean, this is something, you know, you ought to bring up. Like, you know, it needs to be talked about that, you know, barebacking's not safe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Even if you are HIV positive.
Because mm-hmm.
there's a lot of other diseases out there that are, besides HIV, that you could still catch.
Right.
And there's many other HIV strains that have different drug resistances that you need to attend to as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that point isn't really stressed enough. And I don't know why. If it is it because there hasn't been a whole lot of research on that, or does anybody know?
I think we don't really understand how different strains, you know, that have the drug resistance, really work. Or I don't think there's been that many studies about, you know, basically picking up multiple strains of the HIV virus and what that effect is. So I think the science just isn't out there yet, at least not that I've seen.
Okay.
Most of the cases I've seen on it are case studies, basically, right. Where someone's it's called, they've had super infection.
But there's
not
multiple strains.
And that, I think that's the problem with a lot of reporting with the AIDS virus, is because it's all subjective. You have to take the word of somebody who says, well, I did this, but I didn't do that, and so you don't know. You just don't know. Mm-hmm. I need to pop in here and let everyone know that they are listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude right here on good old KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston. And always on the World Wide Web at kpft.org. You can call to the station, 713-526-5738. We're talking with Justin and Wooja and
Adriana.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Discussing therapy issues. Shall we take a little break? And I've got a little tune.
Uh-oh, I'm scared.
No, it's actually it's kind of along the lines of.
That's why I'm scared.
Why?
That you think this is along the lines.
It's an old song by Romanofsky and Phillips.
The opening song.
are we about to get the Muppet Show?
No. Totally on the contrary. This song is called Guilt Trip.
I gave you my heart to have and to hold. You warmed it at first, then you dropped it cold. Now you want to be friends. Oh, isn't that sweet? Well, maybe I can. But first you'll have to go on a retreat. Not the kind of a vacation for relaxing in the shade. I'm talking about a guilt trip. All expenses paid. Leave your problems far behind, take mine along instead. It's what you deserve, cause you've been playing with my head. Pack your suitcase full of sorrow and lock yourself inside. You won't feel any better, but I'll be satisfied. You ruined my life, deciding to leave. But you're gonna suffer if I'm gonna grieve. Now you like to travel, you like being alone. Well, here's a little trip you can take all by your little self at home. Not the kind of a vacation where you lay out in the sun. I'm talking about a guilt trip. Misery for one. Leave your
problems far behind. Take mine along instead. It's what you deserve because you've been playing with my head. Pack your suitcase full of sorrow and lock yourself inside. You won't feel any better, but I'll be satisfied. I do not want to see you smiling. You're not supposed to have a good time. You shouldn't think about your feelings. You should only be concerned with mine. Hey, hey, hey. I do not want to see you smiling. You're not supposed to have a good time. You shouldn't think about your feelings. You should only be concerned with mine. Leave your problems far behind. Take mine along instead. Hey! It's what you deserve, cause you've been playing with my head.
Hey!
Hey! Pack your suitcase full of sorrow and lock yourself inside. You won't feel any better, but I'll be satisfied.
Hey! Hey! Hey!
Leave your problems far behind. Take mine along instead.
Hey!
It's what you deserve, cause you've been playing with my head.
Hey! Hey!
Not the kind of a vacation that you take to just unwind. I'm talking about a guilt trip. Leave your camera behind.
Yes, Guilt Trip, Romanowski and Phillips, and that CD. Actually, the original was an LP. that was done in 1986.
What's an LP?
Something I'm going to beat your butt with.
Yeah, sure. Promise me with a good time.
Yeah. Those great big discs out of vinyl. Yeah. Okay.
I know.
Okay, yes.
How much you love LPs.
This CD came out in 1986, and that was their second album. Second. We are back listening to After Hours, and Justin is here, and we're continuing by talking about...
Depression?
Yes.
That's an exciting topic.
Yes. we're going for feel good. You know? Happy, you know.
Well, after the guilt trip from Romanowski and Phillips, you would probably fall into a bit of depression.
Yes. So let's discuss it and get it out in the open and then move forward from there.
Okay.
Okay. So
maybe basically how to identify if you are depressed, because some people may not even know that they're depressed.
That's a very good point. Some things you might keep out for is just, you know, you're depressed. You feel down in the dumps.
Down in the dumps. It lasts for a while.
Mm-hmm.
The usual things that you used to have make you happy don't really make you happy anymore. Don't really affect you.
Mm-hmm. You might overeat. You might stop eating, undereat.
Oversleep, undersleep.
Shop too much,
mm-hmm.
have too much sex, which some people might say, "What is that?"
Also called sexual acting out.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy knows nothing about that.
Nothing about that. Nor do I know anything about excessive shopping.
No.
Yeah. How do you tell a gay man he shops too much?
Yeah. my lover tells me that.
You cut up his credit card
when the bills come in.
That's how you tell him.
Then he's like, "Oh my God, no!"
Yeah.
So these are things that you would use to escape what you might be feeling. And another one that somebody just brought up is drug use.
Oh yes.
Alcohol.
I think it's also important to remember that it's not just sadness. But anxiety can also be a sign of depression. Just sort of having
lethargy.
Sort of negative thoughts.
Lethargy.
Apathy.
Yeah.
Disengagement.
And it's really important to, if you know someone or if you are experiencing this, to seek help. There are different places to go. There are different people to talk to that are accessible. And if you do just some simple research on the internet, can find some places to go.
In the past, this was something people didn't talk about.
Right.
There's a lot of, going back to shame. There's a lot of shame over it. There was something that, if it wasn't going on in your family, you kept it within your family. You didn't, but, we're in a new era. We're in a new time. And, we're in the age of Dr. Phil and, Oprah's, met counseling sessions on
the air.
The thing about depression that kind of irritates me is that so many people in this country have depression, and they think taking a pill is going to cure it. But to my way of thinking, it just kind of covers it. It doesn't get to the root of why you're depressed, and until you do that, I don't think you can get rid of it.
I think for some people, just taking that pill, that's what they. If for cases where it's a chemical imbalance that's causing their depression, usually there's a genetic factor in that.
Mm-hmm.
That's.
So how do you know if it's that or if it's just this pill is just covering up the symptoms of what's really behind the depression?
Well, that's why you really need a good therapist.
Aha!
A lot of times, combination of therapy and medication is the best way to go.
That is the best way to go.
But I always recommend therapy for a little while before even considering medication. If, it's something that somebody's just noticing or having trouble with.
And what in therapy is going to help alleviate my depression?
Sometimes talking about issues that may be behind it, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting at those and putting them out on the table. Some people have never talked about certain things that are causing them to be sad, and maybe that just being able to talk about it with somebody openly helps to alleviate some of the anxiety and some of the depression.
Especially someone who is the third anonymous or open, third party.
Mm-hmm.
And also someone who's bound within the realm of some parameters of confidentiality to not go, blab about it too.
Right.
Your
that
neighbors
would seem pretty important.
Yeah, having a safe space in which to talk.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys dealt with patients with depression? And can you talk a little bit about it in general terms?
Yes. I think for Rich, anyone who's practicing as a therapist is that's a major issue that anyone deals with.
I think sometimes you'll have a client, or we'll have a client that comes in, and they don't actually identify as depressed either. They just know that they don't feel good. And then part of the process is helping them understand why they don't feel good, what that means for them,
mm-hmm.
sort of where it began, what sort of things in their lives can trigger them feeling worse or feeling better. And so that's a big part of, I think, some of the really basic stuff that we can do. Having them learn new behaviors that are sort of contrary to those behaviors they have been engaging in that facilitate the depression.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and really, really talking about it can help alleviate?
I think that's really important, actually, because one of the reasons why I think many people stay depressed is because they don't have anyone whom they can sort of vent,
mm-hmm.
In a sense, get those negative feelings out of the body to, because I think that it's really important that you get those negative feelings out of the body, otherwise they just sort of manifest themselves and stay stuck in the body. But by talking about them with somebody who's objective, who is trained in listening for certain cues and helping guide you in your own exploration of your negative feelings, that can be really helpful. I think that, in a sense, one of the most important skills of the psychotherapist is knowing sort of how to help the person find their own cues. And that's really where it gets helpful, because when you talk to your friends don't know, in a sense, what to look for. And trying to help you, you know, find your own cues or find your own triggers. But that's the psychotherapist's job.
Your friends are going to say, well, you should do this, or right. you should do that. And, you know, maybe that's good for them, but everybody's different. So, and then if you don't do that, then they're going to get mad at you and say, well, you know, you're still depressed because you didn't follow my advice. Well, I sometimes advice from a friend is not a good thing, I think.
Well, it's meant well most of the time.
Yes.
It doesn't, you know.
But it doesn't come from, it comes from a biased point of view. And by biased, I mean that your friend is going to have a different value system than you.
I think it's probably safe to say that a good therapist is not going to give you advice. They're going to help you find your own path. And that works best for you.
How do you get somebody to find their own path?
A lot of times in my practice, I don't necessarily, I think it's kind of ironic that we're talking about depression as this big issue. It is, it's out there, but I don't necessarily work with people in that way.
Mm-hmm.
When they come in, what I try to do is witness what they're going through, acknowledge that yes, they have had some really difficult circumstances and bad things happen in their life and that it's normal to feel this way. And what I do is just try to listen, make sure that they have some sense of comfort and trust in me that something good will come of them talking, but I don't necessarily push them in a certain direction. I think that's what Justin meant about finding one's own path,
mm-hmm.
is to sort of like be witnesses to what they're going through,
mm-hmm.
which is something that they may not be getting elsewhere.
Okay. Next.
Something else that kind of goes, kind of depression segues us into is the secondary issues associated with coming out, or being, or having, you know, split lives, or being out in some parts of your life and not out in others.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a funny question to ask someone, like, are you out? And, like, it's, there's always an implicit out to whom.
Yes, because being out is not an event, it's a process.
Right.
Right.
And I think even the most out activists have somebody in their lives they're not out to. Aunt Myrtle, you know, who's 86 and she's just not going to understand, and so, you know, you don't tell her, or somebody.
Well, if you're going through life meeting new people,
mm-hmm.
you're still in the process of coming out. You can come out sure. to everyone that you know, but until you stop meeting new people, you're still in the coming out process. Because, you know, when you meet someone new, somewhere along the way, your sexual orientation is probably going to become an issue.
Yeah. And well, I solve that by trying to just look as gay as I can. Gay. So it's just not an issue. People automatically know.
And you do it very well.
Thank you.
That's why Jimmy wears the pink shirt.
The pink shirt, the, you know, yeah, and the earring and the jewelry and the, you know, the this and the that. And
but I'm sure you have also, as gay as you may appear, run into people who just don't get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it's like, duh!
Right, and so, you know, despite whatever efforts you make to be constantly out, there's still a coming out
sure.
process.
Sure, there is. There is. And so, what are some of the problems with that?
Well, for what, I think confusion can be one of the most obvious problems in, you know, trying to remember whom you are out to and whom you're not,
mm-hmm.
And making sure that the people that you are out to that have relationships to the people that you're not out to don't spill the beans on you.
Wow.
Yeah.
That never works.
Right, and but most of us are really dealing with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Peer pressure is also one.
Say again?
Peer pressure is also part of it, because in schools people aren't out to them, but outside of school they are.
Mm-hmm. Either peer pressure to come out or to stay in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Yeah.
A lot of the time to say yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
But now that
people are coming out at an earlier and earlier and earlier age? Are there specific problems associated with that? In my day, you know, you were in your 20s before you came out, and now Hatch is open to anyone from 13 to 20, and there are some 13-year-olds who identify as gay.
Mm-hmm. I think it's definitely kind of a, I think the fact that many, so many 13-year-olds and even younger in some cases are feel safe enough to come out is definitely a testament that we're moving in, you know, although albeit slow, we're moving in a good direction. Even if it is, you know, three steps forward and two steps back sometimes. But there is, I think it shows that there is some progress being made.
There is a hell of a lot of progress, because in my day, when I was at, I was gay, I've been gay all my life, and I knew I was gay. I knew I was different, because I never heard the word homosexual until I was 15 years old. And all of a sudden, I knew what I was. And that was a total revelation for me. That was my personal coming out, just realizing. And it was I was 15 at the time.
You came out the same time as the Model T's, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, my.
Me and the Supremes.
No.
Yes. So, he's not far from that.
One of the things I was saying earlier is that I don't necessarily think I work with that many people that are struggling with coming out. I think that the coming out process that I see a lot more is coming out about HIV status and not necessarily about...
That's for most people, I think it's harder to come out as HIV positive than coming out gay. And at the worst part of the epidemic, a lot of families got the double whammy, because they didn't even know their son was gay, and then all of a sudden they're gay and have AIDS. So,
Oh, you know which population I do see the coming out issues a lot more is in the transgendered population.
Absolutely.
Where I think that's starting to happen. More and more people are coming out in that realm, and not necessarily the sexual orientation as much.
And actually, the most closeted community we have is probably bisexuals. As trendy as it may be for teenagers and young and 20-somethings to claim bisexuality, the reality is that once you're married and have children, it can pose a real problem to come out as bisexual, because you may get divorced, and because of the courts, especially in the state of Texas, you may lose your children just because you are an open bisexual. So,
and it's also important to say there's this stigma within the gay community as well about bisexuality.
Oh, absolutely. It's
bisexuals
huge.
Bisexuals are just not accepted on any side.
Yes. It kills me. I don't understand it. Gay men especially, who do not even believe in bisexuality.
Bi now, gay later.
Right. They do not believe that is an authentic sexual orientation. And I don't know what it takes. Maybe get a bisexual boyfriend until you realize, yeah, okay, it does exist.
Well, what I've seen a lot is parents are really now starting to accept the kids, because I was 13 when my parents found out, and they really started accepting me for who I am, and they've seen it all in the communities. They're really starting to see how everybody else, but back then they didn't really understand it, and they didn't really have people that accepted their friends and stuff, but now they see how it's being more accepted. They're starting to understand why, and they're starting to give more trust towards it.
Do you go ahead and introduce yourself, or if you're
I'm DJ. I started to really realize it when I was 11 and stuff. So, it happened at a slumber party when I was 13. It was my birthday party, and it just came out during that time.
Wow. So, So in a way, you kind of had your own little coming out party.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. I was waiting for that.
I think there's another community or level of coming out that a lot of that's sort of going on as well, which is the sexual minorities within the GLBT community, such as polyamorous and BDSM.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely.
Polyamorous? What's that?
Polyamorous is having more than one primary relationship.
Oh, okay.
That's more open.
Oh, hey. Yeah, that's Mikey. Yeah.
Okay.
I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. Loving more than one person. Yes. Realizing that maybe just one person cannot fulfill all your dreams.
Nope, you
or,
really not enough.
Or just or that you just fall in love with more than one person.
Well, yeah. I don't know what the lot is like when you have a single relationship, kind of when you're in that motion for a long time, it kind of gets kind of a little old into it. So some people like to spice it a little up of having an open one for a little bit, but that's about it. That's what I would have. That's the only reason.
And then there's also relationships that are, you know, in Jimmy's time, they were called menage a trois. Now they're called now they're called triads or poly relationships, mm-hmm. where you have quads, yeah, where you have multiple, we just have multiple parties,
multiple
friends,
and that's the only form it can take.
Yes, right. And more common in poly, I tend to see more triad because then you would see a quad or a quint or
that's
three or four people in a loving relationship all together.
Right.
There is another form that I'm in, and this Pride Week, Pride Day will mark my 30-year relationship with my lover, who has another lover in another town, and they've been together even longer. But it works, even though the other lover and I do not get along. But I mean, it works for us.
Yeah.
And it's worked well for many, many years. I'm very happy in the relationship. At one time, I had a boyfriend, along with my lover. I'll probably have one again. But
we got a call, I think.
We have a call.
Yes,
okay,
caller.
Just a moment.
Yay!
Okay. So, one thing that I've kind of going back on the issue of coming out that I thought I might bring up is when someone is diagnosed with HIV positive, a lot of their friends, especially if it's someone who's male diagnosed HIV positive, if they're straight, their friends and their families accusing them of being gay.
Right.
Or, you know,
right.
And then having to deal with, just having to take on a whole identity or being, it's all very convoluted.
It's because mainly like on the news, you always hear that the gays are the ones that have the big portion of their percentage are having sexual diseases come out more than straights. But now as you see it, more straights are actually having them than the gays, and it's really changed over the years.
But the stigma is still there, though.
Yes,
right.
It is.
So, what are you snickering at, Virgin?
Huh?
Thing. Huh? It's him behind you.
He's going.
You know, one thing that I wanted to mention about polyamorous relationships is that causes some relational stress sometimes, and it's very interesting to work with these relationships in therapy. I don't know if you guys have had any experience with that.
I'm currently seeing a triad.
Oh, wow.
I worked with somebody that was in a relationship, very loving, with a male and with a female, and she was having a lot of distress over it because they were both accusing her of not being fully committed, and it was very
ouch.
It was very sad for her.
If a couple can have problems, it's probably even worse for a triad. You really have to have clear lines of communication to make sure everyone's needs are being met.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, there was this lady on TV as we were watching the show, and the guy, he has one wife, but another lady living with him, and they live right here in Texas, in around the Houston area. So that he was out for another wife to have around him, and they, the whole show is about how they were trying to accept her, but the other two were acceptive of each other with him, but they still didn't feel they were accepted with her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, there needs to be, you know, consensus. You know, everyone has a part, everyone has a vote in this relation, in that relationship. That, you know, the idea of a democracy really kind of comes to mind.
Unless it's a dom sub relationship.
Yes.
Yes. That's very different.
And that's where we get, you know, the twists.
Right. I mean, there's all kinds of relationships, and it's really hard to make generalizations about.
Absolutely.
Even something like a triad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I always loved about the GLBT communities, because since we are not allowed to marry, we are free to create our relationships the way we want them, not the way that society says they should be. Now, how is that going to change once same-sex marriage becomes legal?
Well, I think it already is changing.
I'm not really sure that it's going to change that much, because I think that there's sort of the shift the other side as well, which is that if you look at the heterosexual community, you see a lot more acceptance of non-traditional heterosexual monogamous relationships within the heterosexual community as well, where there's more flexibility around sexual orientation. There's more flexibility around what makes a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, you know, as the gay community, in a sense, has always done, we are teaching the straight heterosexual community new ways of being. And so even though the gay, you know, gay marriage is perhaps on the horizon, I think what we're really seeing is a reconceptualization of relationships across the board.
And I understand what you're saying, and I partly agree. However, Texas is undergoing something right at this very moment in the court system with polygamy. And the children of polygamists, and the sect that's somewhere in the West Texas, I guess.
Right.
Well,
this is causing a huge commotion.
Well, granted, right. That's actually very different and very separate from.
Right, that's a cult.
That's a cult.
I mean, let's be honest, that's a cult.
Okay,
you know.
To say, though, I myself am in a polyamorous relationship. I don't agree with what a lot of these other groups are doing, because that's gone past just being in this relationship that you're actually in love with other people. That's just trying to, you know.
There's very often coercion in those sorts of relationships, and I think most of us are kind of pretty much opposed to coercion in a relationship.
We have some ethical dilemmas generally in counseling with coercion.
Again, you know.
Okay.
so it's really hard to. To me, it's actually it's an apples and orange comparison.
So it's not the same thing, is what you're saying.
No, right? Yeah, and I don't think you can actually make the comparison even. You know, I mean, when you have a cult in which there's coercion and enforced cross generational, mm-hmm. you know, sort of things, not really equivalent.
So that is very different than a polyamorous relationship.
Right. I mean, like I said, the triad that I'm seeing, it's mm-hmm. actually a closed unit, two women and a man in a relationship together. And they're establishing their own family norms, they are, you know, I think to some degree,
oops.
the gay community is not the only model for those types of relationships, but I think the GLBT community opens up those doors, mm-hmm. or helps opens up those doors.
Okay. Well, this has been a wonderful segment. And I think we should do it again soon.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
I would like to thank Adriana and Woodja for.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
And also
guys.
I'd like to give them each
about 30 seconds to plug their own?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, the Bering Support Network is at 1440 Herald, and it's right down the street from KPFT.
Sure is.
The phone number there is 713-526-1017. And my name's Adriana Gill Wilkerson. If anybody has any questions about counseling practices there, fees, or what issues they can come in and talk about, they can definitely give me a call.
Okay.
I'm Woodrow Flanagan, like I said earlier, and I have a private practice, which is at the intersection of Kirby and US 59, and I can be reached at 713-589-9804, or you can check out my website at www.dwoodjaflanigan.com.
Okay, you got to do that again. That was way too fast.
Okay, the website is www.dwoodjaflanigan.com. It's just D and then my name.
Okay. Flanagan with an I.
With an I and N at a time. Okay. One N at a time.
Okay. And Justin?
And I'm Justin Anderson. I currently do not have a practice. But, you know, I would say you can come see me at West Oaks, but, you know.
You have to be
if you see me, if I see you there, you know, we'll talk.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you very much for
Thank
that.
You.
Thank you, Justin.
Thank you so much. Okay, let's go to a piece of music now. From my good friend Mark Weigel. And this is advice that I like to give the gay community, especially gay men, all the time. It's called Love Your Body Like It Is. And you're hearing it on After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude right here on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston.
Oh, here's one. Become what you've always wanted to be. Your new body awaits you at gym. Go ahead.
Is there something wrong with your old one?
Right here. Okay. This is it. Page 37, our local gay newspaper. Laser hair removal. Prices starting at $99. Botox, collagen, Symmetra, microderm abrasion, laser treatment for wrinkles, dark marks, unwanted tattoos, red faces, and broken blood vessels. Mole removal, glycolic chemical peels, acne, facials, eyelid surgery, brow lift, facelift, scar revision.
Scar revision. That's interesting. My brother, you are not your tattoos.
forget, my brother. The G-A-P. You are not the games you play behind your brother's back, my brother. You're better than that.
You're better than that.
You are the body you were born with, my brother. You are the soul you make yourself.
You are the soul you make yourself.
You are the body you were born with, my brother. You are the soul you make yourself.
You are the soul you make yourself.
You are the body you were born with, my brother. You are the soul you make yourself.
You are the soul you make yourself.
Mark Weigel with Love Your Body. And we're going to do a quick little roundtable discussion. And as a topic, we touched on a little bit before hiatus. That we were talking about. And it's something to bring up again here with, because there's a lot of talk about going on in the community with it. And it was the murder of Lawrence King, or Larry King. He was a 15-year-old student in Oxnard, California. A fellow student has been charged with his murder. And right now, there's a lot of talk going on from several GLBT organizations to have the upcoming murder trial done as a charge as a minor rather than charge as an adult. For those of you who aren't familiar with the case here, it's alleged that the suspect's motivation for the crime is that King was gay, and he had asked the person who shot him, Brandon McOmery, to be his Valentine. At approximately 8:15 in the morning, Larry was shot in the head in a computer lab classroom. The alleged shooter, a 14-year-old, has been charged with premeditated murder with enhancement for use of a firearm in the commission of a hate crime. It's reported that King was shot because he was openly gay and sometimes dressed in a quote-unquote feminine manner. Some of the things have been said that he would come to school dressed, with. Who's talking in the back there? Hold on. Sorry, I'm getting sounds from another room. He came to school sometimes dressed in, with fingernails and makeup and all that. And we touched a little bit about, I don't remember, we played Ellen DeGeneres' comments about it. And, I think one of the things we want to talk that to talk about is this new part of where they're saying that wanting to do, this is a premeditated murder. The kid brings a gun to school, shoots another student point blank, and it's a severe crime. And I know this station and this network is probably a lot more than friendlier than I am in this scheme. I mean, we've talked about murder and hate crime on this show before, but you know, I want to get some opinions from people on this. We've got a 15-year-old kid dead who
what? Yeah, we have this student who was murdered in school, and now these LGBT groups are pushing for the case, for this suspect to be tried as a juvenile, and wanted to kind of hear your opinion. Should he be tried as a juvenile, or should he be tried as an adult? A couple of things. A couple of issues there facing the community. You know, do we let this kid, you know, give this kid a second chance, or do we send him up river as an adult? I think that was kind of where we were going to go with the discussion tonight. So I wanted to hear what you guys had to think about it.
I mean, it doesn't really matter who did it. The fact is, it's a hate crime, and it should not be tolerated. I don't care if a 14-year-old killed a 20-year-old or a 20-year-old killed a 15-year-old. It should not be tolerated. Period.
Since when is any murder okay?
Apparently never, but they're trying to change it to where he'll be tried as a minor instead of an adult.
Well, be a hate crime or not, murder of any kind, you should still be tried as an adult no matter what.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, you go and shoot somebody twice in the head.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That's just plain. I mean, that's just, like it says, premeditated murder. I mean,
and it is a hate crime, and it is about gay issues. But in general, murder is about somebody's got an issue with a wife, or they've got an issue about something, and their buttons get pushed, and they murder. That's kind of the way it works. And the more we can eliminate buttons that people have to be pushed where it upsets them to the point of murder, the better the world will be in all. And homophobia is definitely part of that big picture.
Yeah, and this case, it just happened to be about homophobia,
mm-hmm.
because that's what this 14-year-old had, was a pure, just a plain old case of homophobia. But still, murder's murder, and that's what happened here.
Well, yeah, and whether they try him as an adult or a kid or whatever, you know what, if I'm just wondering what the defense is going to be, because if they go for something like insanity, okay, lock him away forever.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to see the light of day. And anyone else who does anything like that or commits murder, whatever, you know, if you're not going to believe in the death penalty, which, you know, my personal beliefs are kind of against, lock him away forever.
Well, that's the part of it, is the fact that, you know, I'm not going to claim that I'm a criminal, that I understand criminal law and all that, but the, you know, when tried as a minor, you stay in prison until 18 or sometimes 21, and then that record is sealed. So, it has, you know, basically what you're looking at is a person who took a gun to school, shot someone in the head twice, mm-hmm. serving 4, maybe 7 years.
Yeah.
And once that's done, it's stricken from the record.
Yeah.
And that's the part that's concerning about this, is but that...
I agree that he shouldn't be tried as a minor, but I don't think that homosexuality has anything to do with them trying to have him tried as a minor. There are lots and lots and lots of murder cases, lots and lots of different crimes, where the lawyer does everything they possibly can to have the kid tried as a minor for that very reason. That have nothing, that it doesn't, homosexuality doesn't, it's just what, it's what lawyers do. I think he should be tried as an adult.
Yeah.
Well, I think in this particular case, if I remember, because I just read about this evening before coming to the show tonight, in The Advocate, and from what they were reporting, the DA for the case is has sought out Proposition 21, which is in California, their hate crime laws,
mm-hmm.
which, if the kid is tried as an adult, convicted, just on murder itself is 25 to life. If they go ahead and get the Proposition 21 thrown in there, it's an additional 1 to 3 years. So, I mean, we're looking at minimum 25 years for this kid to life plus three.
And see, like in the United States, I mean, here in Houston, I mean, the Texas, the way hate crimes law is, it comes in as a attack on to once it's been tried, case has been solved, and then the jury comes back and says, yes, there was a hate crime involved. Personally, in this case, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in a way, I really think the hate crime aspect of it hurts the prosecution.
Yeah.
Because you keep bringing that up, calling it a hate crime, and you keep bringing into, what you start doing is the defense has an easier opening to smear the victim, saying, this kid came into school with makeup one day and came in with,
wearing high heel boots and stuff like that.
Yeah, those sorts of things. It makes it easier to re-victimize the victim.
Basically defamates the victim's character at that point,
and
which
so
is what not what they're wanting to do, but it's going to happen if in this case, because just like with just about anything else, they're going to do that. So it's just just all in all, I mean, just the fact that it just seems like there's too much of this going on in the world today. I mean, kids shooting kids. What is going on?
And the interest, I mean, the kind of the juxtaposition is you see a lot of cases, and I think we're around the anniversary of Columbine right about now.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember
that,
correctly.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
And that was part of it that was came out of that was the fact that people teased these kids because they thought they were gay. Huh. And they finally snapped to it. And here's an instance where it's the reverse, where someone who is gay is attacked at school. And I mean, we're not talking about, just shoving someone in school. We're not talking about, something how like the school officials like to pass off as saying, it's just, kids growing up feeling their oats.
Well, if I remember correctly, I don't think they gave all the details of the bullying that King went through, but I believe from what I read, all the bullying was mainly verbal.
Yeah,
there was no physical bullying there.
And a lot of the time, the teachers or the principals will not act unless they see it themselves, because it's going to be your word against that person's.
I know someone's trying to call in, but we don't have time, unfortunately.
Well, with Columbine, too, I mean, it's pretty common for kids to call each other fag or whatever. I mean, even their best friend or whatever, and that's not good. But I, my understanding of Columbine was that it had a lot more to do with the hierarchy of high school, in the sense that there were certain people like the jocks and the class president and, those kind, that sort of basically got away with any kind of bad behavior they might care to do, and that everybody else got away with nothing. And the jocks had pretty free rein to harass anybody in any way they wanted, and that was as much of it had to do with it as anything about homosexuality.
But there was some underlying...
There was some harassment about that.
Yeah. But, and part of that is the hierarchy of what we have in the schools. But like I said, this is a very sad case where, it's... the one thing I'm just looking at here doesn't talk about any of the... where the defense is going to be trying to come from. The only thing they're talking about so far is the fact of trying to get a change of venue because of how... And it's going to be hard because this is a widely known case. It's been talked about a lot. But, it's one of those things it's a sad commentary that we've got an instance where this of another kid shot at school because of being gay, and it's not the last time, unfortunately, we're going to see this kind of escalation, especially if this ends up going...
One of the interesting things about the case to me is not just that he's gay, But that, and I don't think he was actually shot for being gay. I think what he was shot for was telling another boy that he loved him.
I don't think it. I don't think it was. I don't think he said he loved him. That he had an interest.
He wanted to be his Valentine.
He definitely had an interest.
He sort of expressed a romantic interest.
Yeah, he did.
In this other kid, and I think that's actually what he was shot for.
Well, what
if he'd have just been sort of passively gay and not, you know?
Yeah, but no. Okay, if the thing is this, if instead,
no.
Then they're saying that if it was Lauren King, then everything is okay.
No.
But it's but that's just
Lauren. No, that's King. Not what I'm saying.
No, but that's what your argument is. The fact is, because it was a boy saying that he had an attraction to another boy, then, you know, the shooting, it makes more sense.
If he hadn't expressed that to the boy, and I think he has every right to express that, and it should be, the world should be the kind of place where he could say that, and there would be no repercussions. But I think actually him saying that is what triggered the actual murder.
Well, that action did start it, but it was the results of that action, because from what I have read, there was a lot of jokes and teasing and stuff like that made towards the 14-year-old.
Oh, of course.
The straight boy in this situation. And I guess he just finally ended up snapping.
Yeah.
And again, that shouldn't be a defense for premeditated murder, because that's what this kid did. He knew what he was doing. He walked in there sound mind and body, and he took off. Of course, police found him several blocks, a couple blocks away, but still.
But it's so sad that you can't express affection for somebody without having to worry about being killed for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the way the world is today, unfortunately, from what I've seen.
All right. Well, we're getting closer to the end of the show. I know someone was trying to call in, but you know we're opening up the lines on this topic because we were running short of time, and it's something we'll be keeping an eye on here. Coming up there, hopefully we'll have some more lighthearted stuff.
But another issue that goes right along with that thing with the kid with the gun, why wasn't the gun locked up?
Yeah.
So
it's too easy to get guns.
It's too easy to get a hold of them, and, you know, someone thinks that's the way to solve a problem on that.
It doesn't solve a problem, it makes more.
Yeah. You've been listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude, on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org. We'll be back next week, and let's throw a couple PSAs in your ear.
Explore World of Entertainment April 19th, 20th, April 27th, and 28th at the Houston International Festival. Spotlighting out of Africa in downtown Houston. Make the Out of Africa Zone your first stop. Visit the Mountain Carved Church of Lalibela, one of the 8 wonders of the world. Also, check out the North American debut of the National Dance Theater of Ethiopia on the WAMU stage. And of course, don't miss the world stage featuring top artists like Buddy Guy, the Neville Brothers, Habib Koete, the Wailers, and Taj Mahal. Visit ifest.org online for more information. Brought to you by KPFT 90.1 FM Houston.
This is KPFT Houston. The following program may contain language or imagery that may be offensive to some listeners. Discretion is advised. The Federal Communications Commission permits the broadcast of some profanity during hours deemed to be safe harbor when children are less likely to be listening. KPFT upholds a stricter policy permitting the broadcast of sensitive material only between the hours of midnight and 5 a.m. The FCC forbids the broadcast of some sexual discussions or other suggestive matters regardless of the hour. If you have any questions or concerns, please call the program director during business hours at 713-526-4255. This is KPFT Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston.
If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.